My heart is beating with the fact I feel the hours crashing down my mind.
Once again, as the Boomtown Rats jeez, fade away into the middle distance, and I find myself staring into space and muddling my words, I know that's my cue to say with a Pavlovian response, this is Clockwork Wireless on 90FM. It can only get better from here on in. Isn't the Pretenders and Back on the Chain Gang with Hissy Crind, as I would call her in a current state of mind. It was getting up early to watch the cricket that did it, really. That was what was did. It's Clockwork Wireless on 90FM. Terry Anderson here with you once again. In the news this week, the boredom factor is becoming apparent, with stocks and share prices still dominating the news. In the city, where the brokers are all broke and the jobbers are out of a job, this week the Chancellor of the Exchequer again called for a reduction in interest rates. Mr. Lawson then made another speech, which seems to me an easy way to reduce everyone's interest. Also this week we learnt the true meaning of an army assault course. It's where you're sent on a course to learn how to assault new recruits, I think. And also this week saw the appointment of a counsellor to act as an agony uncle to help to check out the problems of members of the security services to see what's bugging them, presumably. Oh dear. Coming up tonight, we have music from Voice of the Beehive, Aztec Camera, Suzanne Vega's new single, and a track from Brian Ferry's new album. We'll be talking about the hazards of playing golf, and in our TV review, we'll look into the use of cliches in news reporting. We have an edition of Clockwork Wireless News with a bit of luck, with Alex Wright and Busby Barkley, of course, and we'll also be listening to a wobbly version of Independent Radio News broadcast earlier this week. It's all coming up in about 55 minutes' time. We present the thrills and spills of the Intrepid Birdman show, and we'll have a chat with him a bit later. It's all coming up on Clockwork Wireless 90 FM. But first, excellent new single from Aztec Camera. This is High, Wide and Tall.
Yeah.
it's a hit. Votes the jury. Aztec Camera and Deep and Wide and Doll. New single. And the band, really, it's Roddy Frame is the name of the guy. And Aztec Camera is just sort of working title for the band. I've got a lot of time for this chap because instead of just whacking out tracks from albums and single after single after single, he just waits until he's got something really good to put out. That's a good single. Aztec Camera, Deep and Wide and Tall. It's Clockwork Wireless on 90FM. And of course, our sympathies this week must go to Maureen Starkey, the ex-wife of Ringo Starr. Mrs. Starkey was in court this week requesting more money because she's been struggling along on only £70,000 a year. It must be very tough going. I feel desperately sorry for her. But now, if you've ever bought a second-hand car that you saw advertised in the local paper and then had nothing but trouble with it, a clue as to why these things happened turned up in a court report this week from the South Wales Echo. And the report ran, after hearing evidence that the car he had sold as a good roadworthy vehicle formerly driven by my eldest son was in fact made up of four cars rather badly welded together and given a quick spray job, Mr. Richard Stress told the court, "No second-hand car is perfect." Well, if ever George Cole wants to give up the role of Arthur Daly, then the producers of Minder need look no further than Mr. Stress, I think. It's perfect casting, I would certainly have thought. It really reminds me of that awful joke about the bloke who calls his car Baby because it doesn't go anywhere without a rattle, but let's not dwell upon that. But actually, when I bought my car recently, it was rust-free. But I suppose it would have been a bit of a cheek to make me pay for the rust, really, wouldn't it? Coming up next, we're going to be talking about Eamon Andrews, the career of Eamon Andrews, and also the Sports Report, the programme with which he was associated for many years. First, though, we hear from the Sugar Cubes. Last week we heard the English version of their single, now the original Icelandic version. Still number one in the independent charts, the Sugar Cubes and Birthday. Well, that's probably the first time an Icelandic song has been heard on British radio, and if the Intrepid Birdman has anything to do with it, it'll be the last time as well. Very popular in the studios at Clockwork Wells. I like it. It's the Sugar Cubes and Birthday. Very hypnotic sound, the Sugar Cubes. Well, now, I've actually found that one of the sadder aspects of growing older is that people who, through the media of television and radio, have been entertaining me since my childhood, many of these people have died in recent years, and I feel a genuine loss in this, quite seriously, because like when Tommy Cooper died so suddenly on stage at the London Palladium, and when turning on the radio one morning and learning that Eric Morecambe too had left us, as they say, I felt as though, you know, I'd lost a close relative. It's quite serious. I mean, so much do these people become part of our lives. And no, I'm always accused of name-dropping, but I did, in fact, meet Eamon Andrews once in rather bizarre circumstances when we were both waiting for a taxi. And although we only spoke for about 5 minutes, I was left with the impression that he was a thoroughly charming and kind man, as everybody's been saying this week. Now, for many people, Eamon Andrews will always be remembered for leaping out from behind pillars and out of doorways to exclaim to a nonplussed victim those venerable words, "This is your life." But for me, the voice of Eamon Andrews will always evoke memories of about 25 years ago when he presented Sports Report on what was then called the Light Programme on the BBC, dark and foggy Saturday evenings at 5 o'clock, with my mother making the tea and my father checking his pools coupon, football pools coupon. Eamon Andrews would introduce the programme after this stirring piece of music. And to this day, that music introduces Sports Report, now on Radio 2, of course. And as fans stream out of soccer grounds on a Saturday afternoon, those carrying radios with the familiar theme blaring out are asked by all those that pass by, how did United get on, and did Liverpool win, how many did Fulham lose by, and so on. And this week sees the publication of a book to mark the 40th anniversary of Sports Report. And with each copy comes an hour-long cassette that highlights the great moments of sporting broadcasts on the radio since the Second World War. And both the book itself and the accompanying tape evoke great memories of sporting achievement over the last 40 years, from Jim Laker taking 19 Australian wickets in 1956 to the England soccer team's victory in the World Cup final at Wembley a decade later. And Sports Report is in fact published this week by MacDonald and Queen Anne Press at £12.95, and could make an excellent Christmas present for anyone who enjoys a wallow in sporting nostalgia. Now, this is Clockwork Wireless. We have a little address for you. It's Clockwork Wireless, Suite 14, Creasy House, Tower Bridge Road, London, SE14SL. That's our address. And if you write to us and send a large stamped addressed envelope with an 18 pence stamp on it, we'll send you an information pack back telling you all about the stations. That's available from Clockwork Wireless, Suite 14, Creasy House, Tower Bridge Road, London, SE14SL. All you have to do is ask, and enclose a stamped addressed envelope with an 18 pence stamp on it, and it can be yours. Coming up now, a track from Brian Ferry's new album Bête Noire, and this track is called Limbo. You never get me. It's a track from Brian Ferry's new album Bête Noire. It's a track called Limbo. It's quite a good album. I have his last album, which I felt was rather overproduced and just sort of went in one ear and out the other. This album is a lot stronger, I feel. It's called Bête Noire, and we'll probably play more tracks in the weeks to come. There's a report in the paper this week about a woman who's had to give up drinking coffee because it makes her too passionate. And I thought a perfect antidote for her would be she should just watch a Nescafe commercial. That would soon cool her down. I've never heard of coffee making anyone passionate before, I must say. Continuing, well, before we talk about sporting injuries, which I'm coming to in a minute, watching the World Cup final earlier on, it's a shame that England lost and Australia quite clearly were the better side and deserved to win. But I really did feel that England lost it as much as Australia did win the game. And I'm certain, if you saw it, you'll know what I mean, but I'm sure that Mike Gatting, the England captain, won't want to see too many replays of the way he got out. But Australia won the World Cup, so. Yahoo sucks to them. But continuing our series of highlighting bizarre sporting injuries, this week's prize goes to Chetan Sharma, the Indian bowler, who this week was playing against England in the semi-final. He dropped a catch, and he was so annoyed with himself that he threw the ball into the ground with such ferocity that he pulled a muscle in his shoulder and had to leave the field. It was really good fun. Of course, sport can, of course, be quite a dangerous business. You may not have thought that golf would fit into that category, but this week came a report that a player in Nigeria had beaten his caddy to death with a 3-iron after the caddy gave him the wrong advice. Apparently, he overhit the green by 10 yards and should have had a 4 or 5 iron instead. So, of course, he was quite justified in braining the caddy. I know how he felt. If you play golf yourself, the next time you stand at the first tee ready to play your first shot, worry no more about the consequences if you mishit the ball. Nothing could be as bad as the fate that awaited Matthew Boyer, who this week played probably the most disastrous shot in the history of golf. The Daily Express reported how a keen player's slice shot wiped out his country's entire air force and landed him with a £36 million bill. According to a report from the West African state of Benin, factory overseer Matthew Boyer was practicing during his lunch break on ground near an airbase, and Mr. Boyer's ball swerved over the fence and hit a bird, which plummeted towards the runway, smashing into the windscreen of a jet about to take off. And the horrified pilot, it was said, wrestled with the controls but was unable to stop before skidding and plunging into a group of Air Force jets. And the pilot escaped, but all 4 aircraft comprising the state's entire Air Force were wrecked. And Mr. Boyer, who's at £180 a year, cotton processing plant worker, was confronted at work by police, and the luckless Mr. Boyer was presented with the bill to replace the aircraft at £36 million plus interest. But worse was to come for the poor chap. The government charged him with hooliganism, and he now faces a 6-month prison sentence. Actually, I think he's secretly part of Ronald Reagan's strategic defence initiative. When those Russian bombs are heading for America, Mr. Boyer will be engaged to stand on top of the Statue of Liberty with a couple of square yards of AstroTurf, and he lines up a dozen golf balls and bashes the missiles down by one by one. I don't think he could be any more fanciful than the real strategic defence initiative. But time now for the second in our series of one-minute classics. This week, we present Moby Dick, and as usual, the story is introduced by John Machita.
Moby Dick is a true American classic. Herman Melville's rich, textured prose captures the romance of the sea as well as the camaraderie of the human spirit. Moby Dick is much more than the story of a whale. It is a treatise on man's place in the universe. Here now is Moby Dick in exactly 1 minute.
Cock Call me Ishmael. And so our great adventure begins. Ishmael is time to kill. He's bored, he's broke, having a trip to sea. Why not? First off, New Bedford, the weather's crummy. He's beaten all the inns of book solid. So he shares a room with a harpoon hurtling heathen named Queequeg. Now the best of friends, they decide to ship out together. But first, it's off to Nantucket for more clam chowder. Finally, they set sail for 3 long and boring years at sea. Drive him, aft man, the cap stands. Stow the chowder. Then Captain Ahab appears on deck. He's handicapped, only has one leg. It seems this big fish got the other one. He yells at his crew, find me that fish, the one they call Moby Dick. That's the one that's big and white and mean. And so the Pequod sails around Cape Horn. Ahab paces the deck. He yells at every passing ship, have ye seen the great white? Next is off to the Pacific. Ahab keeps pacing the deck as the ship sails on and on and on and on through hundreds of pages of painfully padded, pathetic paragraphs. Have ye seen the great white? And another year goes by, and then the lookout yells, there she blows! It's big, it's white, it's mean, it's Moby Dick! They all hop into the dinghies and they row for days, but Moby gets away. Then a typhoon hits. The sails get ripped to shreds and they all get wet. Then a lookout yells, Darcy blows again. Back into the dinghies, this time they harpoon the heck out of Moby, which really gets him mad. So Moby munches a few men, bashes a few boats, punches the Pequod, gives Ahab a ride, and everybody dies. But the fish and Ish.
Sounds like they had a whale of a time with that one. Dear, oh dear. We'll have another 60-second classic from John Mishita next week, A Life on the Ocean Wave. Christopher Cross now and Sailing. doesn't really matter if I make a spoonerism of his name, Christopher Cross, and sailing. See that Kenneth Baker, the Secretary of State of Education, or for Education, I should say, is refusing to say if Latin will be part of the new core curriculum. Not all that bothered, but the very thought of Latin brings back hideous memories for me of blue-stained fingers from overflowing inkwells and sitting on desperately uncomfortable wooden benches with splinters in your bum. This is probably better than hamsters, but we'll not continue that theme. But I don't know whether Latin is really quite comprehensively taught in the schools at the moment. Having learnt it for about 2 or 3 years, all I can remember is that the very first lesson that I learnt, where you learnt the verb to love, which was amoa, massa, mater, marmus, amartis, amant. And the only other thing I remember is the conjugation, or whatever you call it, of the word table, which was mensa, mensa, mensae, and loads of other stuff like that. It's quite ludicrous. I mean, how can a table have tenses? Anyway, this Latin business, it's all Greek to me. Quite a departure from the usual treadmill of the Miss World contest this year, I noticed. I see that one of the contestants, Miss Bahamas, has deviated from the normal trivia and has said that her ambition is to be a pathologist. Presumably this means she'll carry out each autopsy twice, once in a swimsuit and then in full evening gown. Let's just hope she doesn't give her pathology reports in reverse order. Could mean trouble. Referring back to the Eamon Andrews story we were speaking about earlier, I wonder why is it that so much of the media falls back onto clichés to describe a story? As soon as someone from the entertainment industry dies, you can guarantee that on news bulletins it will be reported that the world of show business was today paying tribute to whoever it is, or tributes were today flowing in from the world of show business. And also, another one is whenever there's a riot somewhere, we're told community leaders today appealed for calm. I want to know who are these community leaders and who elects them. Probably the most ludicrous cliche turns up after some particularly hideous crime has been committed, and news reports say figures from the underworld today condemn this crime and pledge to help police find the perpetrators. I mean, are we seriously supposed to believe that some bloke phones up the BBC news desk and says, "Hello, I'm a figure from the underworld and I want to condemn this crime"? Of course, it doesn't happen. They just make it up. But the quality of television that we can expect in the future was hinted at this week by London Weekend Television's new director of programmes, Greg Dyke, who has told the Broadcasting Press Guild that LWT, London Weekend Television, needs to become the Sainsbury's of ITV. Popular, but quality, and not the co-op. He said, "We have to accept that the audience is changing and they make greater demands. The traditional working class in London and the South East have changed and our programme schedule has to reflect that." Mr. Dyke said he would like to see more drama on Saturday nights mixed with people shows like Blind Date and Beadles About, which doesn't sound too reassuring really, does it? But meanwhile, I see that the Conservative MP, Robert Addley, has demanded that the Home Secretary ban all-night television, as he claims it encourages truancy and people to stay away from work. He says it's an unhealthy, unnecessary and undesirable aspect of society. But the trouble is that much of the stuff they show you during the day and early evening is enough to send you to sleep anyway. But, you know, last week I was saying about Suzanne Vega being on the South Bank show. And I watched Spitting Image last week, got home in time to watch that, which incidentally I thought got off to a very good start last week. It was quite a solid script, and it'd be interesting to see if they can maintain the standards through the series. They even used my Charles and Diana joke, which is pretty good. But anyway, at the end of Spitting Image, I went off and made some coffee because there was this really dull and boring bloke on the start of the South Bank show interviewing some tedious theatre critic. And the Suzanne Vega bit was coming on after that. And unfortunately, I was drinking my coffee and watching his dull bloke on the South Bank show. And the next thing I knew, it was 11:45 and I'd missed the whole thing. So I'm hoping somebody has videoed the Suzanne Vega thing off at the South Bank show so I can see it at my leisure. But here, as minor recompense, the new single from Suzanne Vega. It's the title track from the album Solitude Standing, Suzanne Vega. On Clockwork Wireless, 90 FM.
prostitute stands by the window. She turns her head as I walk in the room. I can see by her eyes she's been waiting. Standing in the slant of the late afternoon. And she turns to me with her hand extended. Palm is split with a flower with a flame. Stands in the doorway. I'm struck once again by her black silhouette, by her long cool stare and her silence. I suddenly remember each time we've met. And she turns to me with her hand extended, palm is split with a flower with a flame.
Never. That's Suzanne Vega and Solitude Standing, the title track of the album, and it's also now out as a single. Don't actually think it will be a hit, because all her followers will have the album already, and it's probably not strong enough on its own to become a single hit, but we shall see. I'm often wrong on these things. I see that Edwina Curry has been giving advice to nurses this week, for a change. Mrs. Curry says that they should set an example and give up smoking. And I reckon the nurses should say that they'll give up smoking. They'll agree to give up smoking if Mrs. Curry gives up making speeches, or at least cuts down to 40 a day. Glock Glock Wireless, let me give you that address again, in case you want one of our information packs. It's Glock Glock Wireless, Suite 14... Can you hear me, Mother? Clockwork Wallace, Suite 14, Creasy House, Tower Bridge Road, London, SE14SL. If you want one of our information packs, you just have to write into that address and stamped addressed envelope with an 18 pence stamp on it, and it can be yours. Now, it's one of the enigmas of life, isn't it, that just as we're ambling along, feeling happy with our lot, fate creeps up on us from round the corner and metaphorically beans us one on the bonce with a short length of lead piping. As the Daily Telegraph reported the other day, at a ceremony to mark 100 accident-free working days at the Marnham Power Station in Nottinghamshire, Chief Security Officer Mr. Joseph Judd was stunned when the pulley raising the station's flag broke away from its pole and fell on his head. I bet he was stunned too. But talking of being accident-prone, the other day Paul Woodley was reading the news on LBC, and not to beat about the bush here, he simply had one of those days.
97.3 FM stereo, LBC Radio.
The 10 o'clock news, this is Paul Woodley. An entire Guards battalion of 550 men is still confined to barracks in London this morning after a young recruit was beaten up. The commanding officer of the 2nd Battalion, the Coldstream Guards, has ordered the men to remain inside Wellington Barracks near Buckingham Palace until the attackers own up. About 100 of the men have been singled out for tougher disciplinary action, and several have been seen scrubbing the... and. On a parade ground inside the barracks. The 2nd Battalion is due to take part in the Changing the Guard ceremony at Buckingham Palace later this morning. Army spokesmen say the ceremony will go ahead. Norman Tebbit is defending Mrs. Thatcher's decision to choose a relatively unknown MP as his successor as Conservative Party chairman. Peter Brook, the Paymaster General, is seen as a compromised choice after Trade Secretary Lord Young turned down the job. Mr. Tebbit says he is sure the new Tory chairman will provide Mr. Tebbit says he is sure the new Tory chairman will prove that Mrs. Thatcher has chosen wisely.
I feel terribly sorry for him, poor chap. That's Paul Woodley reading the Independent Radio News on LBC earlier this week. I bet he wished he'd stayed in bed. This is the voice of the Beehive on Clockwork Wireless 90 FM.
We used to go down the bed.
you've got to laugh. And that's Voice, Voice of the Beehive, and What You Have Is Enough. From them on Clockwork Wireless 90 FM. How do we continue? I don't know.
You're right, Elbow.
I'm bearing up very well considering the strain that I'm put under here.
How's your porry off of pots, eh?
As the saying goes. I tell you what, I read this story this week. Right? I thought it might stir you a little bit. I haven't got a punchline or anything about it, but it was a really sad story I read during this week about a woman in America who won $50,000 in their sort of state lottery or whatever, right? And she had 180 days to claim it. And she'd never had any money in her life before, so this report read that I read. And so she didn't want to sort of spend it rashly, so she said to herself that she'd wait until the 180th day to go and claim it so that she'd have plenty of time to think about what to spend it on. So dumpty-dumpty-tum, off she goes to claim it on the 180th day, and she comes to the place where they run the lottery, knocks on the door, says, "I've come to claim my $50,000. And you've guessed it, they said, "Sorry, lady, it's 181 days. She'd miscounted the days, and she didn't get a penny.
What a silly old sausage, eh?
Wouldn't that give you a kick in the shins, to put it cleanly?
I think I'd probably have torn the plate apart.
Oh, dear, yeah. You mean you go through a risky... I mean, it's not a great deal these days, I suppose, $50,000, but, I mean, it's to someone who's never
180
had
180 days is thinking how you're going to spend
right,
it.
Right, yeah.
It comes as a profound disappointment when it's not there.
Mind you, you'd have to be a bit of a mug to miscount the days for 50,000 grand, wouldn't you?
I would have thought so. What it's a not a great intellectual feat, really, is it?
Perhaps not, no. Now then, young man.
Yes.
Coming up in your programme tonight.
Letter of the Young.
Old chap, yeah. Old Bean.
Right.
What have we got?
I thought you were going to tell me.
Well, no, I don't know. This is a sort of unscripted ad lib here, you see, and I don't know what's coming up. It says here.
Coming up. Coming up on this week's show, do-it-yourself psychiatric practice.
Uh-huh.
Yes, you too can sort out other people's heads. It's really great stuff. Mm. I learned how to do it by watching a man at work. So I have first-hand knowledge here.
Right.
How to become a psychiatrist. How about that? It's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah, good. Yes. I look forward to that.
Right.
Hilly's Hot Gossip.
Yes, I think so. I mean, she seems to be working on it at the moment. How's it going, Hill? All right, mate?
Get lost.
<Why not? laughs> Obviously not amused.
And that's it then.
Yep, that's it.
Okay. Right, okay.
Back to the Terry Anderson Show Terry Anderson. Who else?
Live from Beverly Hills. Okay.
Damn.
Time now to very quickly go over to the Clockwork Wireless News studio. Quick.
Clockwork Wireless News.
After last week's visit to see The Witches of Eastwick, the news team have been to see another film. To provide some contrast with the multi-million dollar Hollywood slickness of The Witches, we went to see the homegrown Eat the Rich. The film stars the comic strip and has cameo roles from just about everyone you've ever heard of, including Coos Stark, Angie Bowie, Sandy Shaw, Paul McCartney, and Steve Walsh, proof positive that there is life after being a radio pirate. The film has a lot of very funny moments, and some very witty characters. The fascist Home Secretary single-handedly beating up a load of terrorists, Lemmy selling guns, and a gorgeous scene in a DHSS office where the claimants finally get their revenge on the snooty girl behind the counter. Talking about Lemmy, the soundtrack is provided by Motorhead, and very good it is too. Heavy metal is not dead yet. But what about the plot? Well, that's where the film falls down. Quite honestly, it looks as if it was shot scene by scene, and about halfway through, the scriptwriters started struggling for an ending. The story leaps and cavorts towards a conclusion which really is destined to be an anticlimax. If the film had a point, then we missed it, as did the rest of the audience. So what does it score? Well, comedy value 8, soundtrack 7, and memorability 2. Quite honestly, stay at home.
Clockwork Wireless News. Don't forget where you heard it first.
Come on, baby, and eat the rich. Come on, baby, and eat the rich.
compiled and presented by Busby Barclay and Alex Wright. That review came to you courtesy of Clockwork Wireless News. Well, once again, I'm delighted to be able to make an award for the most pointless letter written to a newspaper this week. And again, it was The Guardian that was the unlucky recipient of this missive. Dear Sir, on Tuesday it took me 110 minutes to get from Poplar to Tower Gateway on the Docklands Light Railway. Is that a record? Yours faithfully, Peter Johnson, Manor Drive, Leicester. And the answer is, of course, as we all know, no, Mr. Johnson, this is a record.
Days are gone, rows of shimmer.
the good old good one, Poco and Rose of Cimarron. Jolly good as well. Let me just run through that address for you one more time. It's Clockwork Wireless, Suite 14, Creasy House, Tower Bridge Road, London, SE14SL. That's our address. And if you'd like one of our information packs, basically if you write to that address and enclose a self-addressed stamped envelope, see what I mean, with an 18 pence stamp on it, we'll send you one of our information bits back to you. Clockwork Wireless, Suite 14, Creasy House, which is C-R-E-A-S-Y, Creasy House, Tower Bridge Road, London, SE14SL. That's us. Coming up next, the Intrepid Birdman. Thanks to Fred Vayner, who contributed to the programme this week, the golfing bit. Also, Alex and Busby for the review of Eat the Rich. Don't forget Spitting Image later on tonight. And look out for the Woody Allen season on BBC Two, which is on Mondays at 9 o'clock in the evening. It's on BBC Two. Hope you can join me next week at 7 o'clock on Clockwork Wireless. Intrepid Birdman next. I'll see you next week at 7. Cheerio.